passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague Joe Healy, and we will be joined here in a little bit by Michigan outfielder Clark Elliott, who is here to talk about the Wolverines, their 2021 season, look ahead to 2022, as well as his performance on the Cape this summer where he won the batting title. So a lot to get into there with Clark Elliott, and we will do that here on the Baseball America College Podcast, which is presented by Rapsodo. Rapsodo has become the industry standard in player performance data. Coaches use Rapsodo data as a measuring stick for player development and evaluation. The Rapsodo National Player Database is a free service that allows you to see how you stack up against your peers and provides a pathway to get discovered by scouts. You can check out the Rapsodo National Player Database at rapsodo.com/national database. All right, Joe, we're back here on the podcast. My dog Millie is here with us, as you heard, and we're rolling along through the off season. It's now November. That means we got past this last weekend was the Halloween baseball games practices that you often see college teams do with the costumes. Signing day is in a week for baseball. We'll definitely have more on that next week online and on the podcast as well. And we're just zipping along here, Joe. So a lot going on. And as always, this offseason, there's more realignment to talk about. So we've got a lot to get to today, in addition to our interview with Clark Elliott.
Yeah, I mean, we're approaching the point in realignment where it's just like, you know, just going to wake us up whenever we get to February and let's just see where we're at, you know, like it really has reached that point where there's been so much movement and so it's so wide ranging. And, you know, you just never know exactly just when you think that, okay, that kind of feels like the last move, like it's not inevitably. And so a lot of things to cover there. I also, listeners, you may be able to hear in my voice, I'm sick. I have a cold, which is like a hipster. I heard a podcaster of a podcast I listened to a couple weeks ago. He had a cold and he mentioned that it's like a hipster illness now, having a cold after a couple of years of COVID concerns. So dealing with cold. So you'll have to excuse my nasally voice a little bit in the interview and in this portion of the podcast, but I'm battling through it. I've kind of forgotten what it's like to be sick. I've been fortunate that I've avoided COVID this whole time. And so I've been pretty healthy. And so it's like remembering what it's like to be kind of under the weather. It's not a lot of fun, but we're powering through it for you guys at a time of year when, you know, don't look now, we are quickly barreling towards the start of the 2022 season, which is a beautiful thing.
It is. I mean, it really is. Once you get past Thanksgiving here, I mean, we got a lot of teams still playing fall ball right now. And the teams in like the furthest southern climates, you know, in Florida and Southern California and Arizona, they'll keep going right up until basically Thanksgiving, but a lot of teams have moved past the team part of fall ball and they're back into like weightlifting mode or individual mode. And, you know, but as more teams wrap up the fall,
it just becomes more and more apparent, like, oh, hey, the 2022 season, it's barreling down, even as we get into much colder weather here and get into winter. But yeah, so still plenty going on in terms of fall ball. Love seeing some of the games that are being played again this year. This last weekend, Georgia and Florida played, and that's a fun one that they've done now. You know, the last 2 years they've been able to do it. You know, playing in Jacksonville the night before the football game, I quite enjoy that one. But we've seen some other enjoyable crowds, and just no matter what you're doing in terms of fall ball this year and in actual games after not having that last year, it's been great to see.
Yeah, no doubt. A couple still to come. I know, UC Irvine, UCLA playing, I think, this coming weekend. So yeah, still some stuff floating out there. I'd be, interested to hear, fall ball is kind of an interesting thing. So much of it is dictated by weather, right? The Midwest and Northeast tend to start early because you got to get done early because the weather starts to turn on you if you do it too late. So for the advantage of being in the South, you really can almost trick the calendar a little bit to where, you finish late enough and yeah, you have to, take time off from the team aspect and you basically take off for the holidays, but you come back early enough in January, I imagine there's some advantage to that just because it, in some ways it probably feels like you really haven't taken a lot of time off and maybe it can feel a little more like one continuous period as opposed to being a program that has to start in early September and then is done, by the time October really gets rolling. And that's a little bit of a longer break. So just kind of, an interesting little thing in fall ball that I've always been curious about that it's probably something I should ask around about, just about the strategy of when exactly your fall ball falls, because so much of it is out of your hands, weather, school calendar, et cetera, et cetera. But there has to be a little bit of strategy to it too.
I mean, there absolutely is. If you look around and, you see some schools want to get going like the second they can, even some Southern schools. And that's often especially true for like coaches that are new. They just want to see what they've got as soon as they can. And, some prefer to wait as long as they can, and others, some lie somewhere in the middle. It's there's not one answer. There's not two answers. There are like 300 answers, it feels like. So yeah, definitely an interesting case here. And as we are today going to talk with Clark Elliott from Michigan, obviously a more northern school that is wrapped up with fall ball at this point, but a very interesting program right now, of course, just a couple of years removed from that College World Series finals appearance. They made the NCAA tournament again this spring and look to be another solid group in Ann Arbor this coming spring. And Clark Elliott is a big part of that. Like I said, coming off of Cape Cod League batting title this summer, and just an all-around good year for, I guess we're still calling them third-year sophomores. It's his third year at Michigan. as he looks towards the draft in next summer as well. So a lot going on with Clark Elliott. And so we're going to be excited to be joined by him, talk a little Michigan baseball, and just see where the Wolverines are at now as they start looking towards 2022. So we're going to get into all that and more with Clark Elliott. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Today on the Baseball America College podcast, we're excited to welcome Michigan outfielder Clark Elliott to the show. Clark is entering his third season with the Wolverines, coming off of a very impressive summer when he won the Cape Cod League batting title, playing for Hyannis, and looking forward to what should be another good season of Michigan baseball, Clark. So we appreciate you taking the time here to join us on the podcast today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on.
So let's step back to last spring. You took a step forward in terms of production and everything in your second season there at Michigan and helped the Wolverines to the NCAA tournament. What do you feel like clicked for you and for the team this last season?
Yeah, last season we had a lot of experience on that team with grad transfers, Ben Sims, Griffin Mazur, Christian Molfetta, Will Proctor, all of those guys coming back. They really gave a lot of knowledge to a lot of us younger guys, a lot of us core, like sophomores in my class. So having them around really helped us push us forward and gave us, I mean, all those guys knew how to get to those regional games and how to win those big games. So having them there to help us out was a big deal.
Obviously, that success came during a season that was unique in a lot of different ways. I mean, you 44-game Big Ten schedule, nothing but conference games. Some of those weekends were four-game weekends. Some of them were pods. On top of it, of course, everybody, like everybody else, you're dealing with COVID protocols and just making life a little bit more difficult there. So what was that grind like in terms of nothing but conference games and the schedule the way it was and still having to do all of the other things on top of that?
Yeah, the schedule was a bit of an obstacle. I mean, it was tough. Only playing weekends, too. You didn't really get midweek games, get into a groove. And obviously, you're facing Friday, Saturday, Sunday guys. And the Big Ten's no slouch, so you're facing good arms those weekends. So it was a little bit tough for us to get into a groove at times. But, I mean, you got to make do with what you got. I mean, those were the cards that we were dealt. So we just did our best to have a good season.
When you found out the schedule, just the way everything was working out, you know, what how did you guys keep focused during that challenging buildup when, you know, you found out the schedule so late? And then once you did see, what was in front of you, what were kind of the thoughts of the team?
Yeah, for the team, we were all just really excited just to be able to play baseball again. I mean, for a lot of us, it had been an entire year since we played organized baseball. And with the seniors coming back, I mean, they never thought they were going to be able to play another college baseball game. So for us, it really wasn't that hard to stay focused because all the guys were just really pumped to be there.
This will be, you know, your third season on campus, as Teddy mentioned, and yet this will be the first time you've played a, I don't know, quote unquote, normal schedule. What are some things you're kind of maybe looking forward to or you're interested in seeing how it works, given that, you know, you're a veteran now, you've been there quite a while, and yet, you know, this is going to be your first taste of, you know, the full, you know, full season, the full midweek games, all the stuff that comes with playing, you know, almost 56 games in the regular season.
Yeah, I'm really just excited just to play every day, get into that groove of playing every single day. I mean, over the summer, I got a little bit of a taste of that, being able to play pretty much every single day. It was a lot of fun. I mean, you get into a groove and you find what works for you. So I'm really excited for that.
You mentioned getting into a groove on the summer, and you definitely did that after a bit of a slow start on the Cape, kind of in an adjustment period. I guess you really took off and finished up with a pretty significant hitting streak at one point and did win the batting title. What what changed for you? How much of an adjustment was it getting to the Cape? You had taken some time off. There had been some weeks in between the end of Michigan season and the start of the Cape. So what was it like getting settled in there? And then what do you feel like got you going?
Yeah, getting in there, I mean, it was tough to start off with. I mean, you're facing really good pitching, and I hadn't seen live pitching in about like 3 weeks. So, I mean, it took a little bit of time just to get my timing back and get into a rhythm of things. But, I mean, once I was out there, my goal was really just to have fun, relax, and play the game that I love. So, I mean, it was really easy out there. I mean, it's perfect baseball environment. I mean, the Cape, historic league. I mean, you're facing great players every single night. So, I mean, it was a lot of fun. I just really just went out there and just tried to have fun and just enjoy myself.
Obviously, it's the Cape, so the answer here is everybody was really, really good. But I'm curious from your experience. I'll give you a couple options here. Was there a pitcher you faced on the Cape where you walked away from your at-bat thinking, holy cow, that was different. That guy's really good. I don't want to face that again. Or was there a guy on your own team as you were in the field that you just kind of caught yourself observing and saying, holy cow, that guy's really good. I'm glad I don't have to face that guy. So a couple options there. But who were kind of some of the nastiest guys you remember from the Cape?
Yeah, for me, I mean, it's tough to pinpoint one or two guys because, I mean, everybody out there is amazing. But, I mean, Michael Prosecki from Louisville, I think he played for Brewster. He was a tough at-bat, left-left. I mean, that's not very fun. So that was a struggle, and that was one of my first at-bats out there. And then for our team, Adrian Saravo, I mean, he was one of our best starting pitchers. And when he was on, and he was disgusting.
The Cape is... As you kind of mentioned, it's about baseball, but it's about a lot more than baseball. Just what were your favorite parts of experiencing that this summer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, doing autograph signings, stuff like that. I mean, being a part of the community. I mean, out there, like, those baseball teams really mean a lot to those people. So being able to put smiles on kids' faces and just, like, entertain that fan base was really fun.
What were some things you were, you know, throughout the summer and now, you know, into the fall as you get prepare for next season, what are some of the things you personally were kind of looking to focus on and work on to make yourself a better player going into next season?
Yeah, this fall I was really just, I mean, tried to keep my skills that I had really well fine-tuned. So that was pitch recognition and commanding the zone. So I tried to really make sure that I was staying on point with that. And then obviously I wanted to impact the ball a little bit more. And that's something I think I did a lot better in the fall. I mean, I was looking at our numbers from the fall, and I think I had like a 700 slugging percentage, and that's a significant step up from what it's been in the past. So for me, it was consistent quality contact, and just staying within myself and holding the zone and maintaining my strengths.
You mentioned last year the Wolverines were like an older bunch, and some of those guys moved on. Now, as now one of the older players yourself, what do you kind of feel like this team has to do to gel and to you know, take the next step as a team going into the spring?
Yeah, our team, we really just need to stay together. I mean, we have a good amount of good core freshmen who could really make an impact. So we're trying to bring them up as upperclassmen and just stay with the path and not try to do too much. I mean, we're putting all the pressure on ourselves, but we're playing with house money. So, I mean, we're just trying to stay within ourselves, not really get warped up in the expectation that people put on us and just compete.
You arrived at Michigan in the immediate aftermath of that incredible run the 2019 team made, coming just one game short of a national title. What do you remember about observing that, watching them play in Omaha, and how excited were you at that point to join the program and be a part of that?
Oh, yeah. Watching them play in Omaha was an amazing experience. I mean, that was my senior year of high school, and I was watching them play. I'm like, holy cow, I get to go join this program. But for me, what really stood out was just how much fun they had on the field. It was like watching a Little League game. All the kids were smiling. I mean, everybody was having a good time. Even the coaches were having a good time. I mean, it felt like there was no moment too big for them, and that they were just out there playing the game that they've been doing forever.
So your bio says you major in cognitive science. What is that, and what does that entail?
Yeah, cognitive science is a mix of comp sci, philosophy, psychology, neuroscience, all kind of warped into one. And for me, I'm on the decision and cognition track. So that means I'm really studying like decision and cognition and how that really works in your brain and the processes that go along with that. I mean, I got to Michigan. I mean, Michigan's obviously a prestigious university. So it's, for me, I really wanted to challenge myself and do something that wasn't going to be super easy. And cognitive science was that path for me.
Like, Where does that lead to, do you think? I know obviously baseball is probably a priority, but if baseball weren't to be that, what would you think you would want to do with that?
Yeah, from there, probably med school, something like that, or go do research somewhere at some other university. I mean, I definitely have to get a master's and go on to further education from there. So it's a lot more school in my future if baseball doesn't work out, which isn't a bad thing.
I mean, it's certainly good to have options like that when you're talking about those kind of things. I mean, you mentioned it, Michigan, a good school. You got a lot of smart guys in that roster, I'm sure. In the downtime you guys have, I mean, where do the conversations go? I'm sure there are a lot of guys majoring in a lot of interesting things. I mean, are you talking about some of the schoolwork? What kind of stuff is coming up? I mean, I'm sure there's a little bit of a higher level intellectual conversation going on there than some people might expect.
Oh yeah, we got some really smart dudes in that clubhouse. So the conversations in the downtime when we're not talking about baseball range from all sorts of crazy topics. I mean, it's really cool to get a lot of interesting perspectives as well, because we got guys from all over the country. So I'm talking with kids from California and Pennsylvania and all sorts of other places. And I'm like getting new perspectives on things that I never really thought about.
You play for Eric Backich there. He has done a lot in college baseball to this point, coached a lot of really good teams. Just the whole coaching staff is pretty high level as well. I don't want the assistants to leave them out here. Just what's that been like being able to play for Coach Backich and Nick Schnabel and the whole group up there?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, our coaching staff is second to none in the country. I mean, those guys taught me so much about the game and a lot of stuff that's not even has to do with the game. I think EB or Coach Backich, his biggest impact is for us is off the field, whether it's through our leadership training that we do in the classroom and stuff like that. He really takes pride in developing us off field, making us better men overall, members in the community. So that's really one thing that I take away, and that's probably what most of the guys take away from being around EB.
All right, so we will start to wrap up here with the question we ask all of our guests, Clark. It's the most important question we ask, and I will ask the question, then I will filibuster a little bit so you can, give it some thought while I talk for a second. But we ask all of our guests to name their favorite sandwich. And so some people describe to us a sandwich they make at home. You know, we get a lot of peanut butter and jelly answers. We get a lot of turkey sandwich answers. We also do get some homemade sandwiches that are a little more off the beaten path. Some people give us an example of a sandwich they eat at a local place, some place they go to quite a bit, or some place from back home that they miss. So we allow you to go any direction you'd like to go with it. But please, Clark Elliott, describe to us your favorite sandwich.
Wow, that is a tough question. I mean, if I'm going out, I love a good Cuban or a Reuben or something like that, something a little more exotic. But most of the sandwiches I make home are pretty boring. It's usually wheat bread, mayo, turkey, and provolone. That's usually my go-to sandwich when I'm heading out the door going to practice. But I think my favorite sandwich that I make at home, this is a classic peanut butter sandwich. One side crunchy, one side smooth. I mean, it works for breakfast. It works for a pregame snack, pre-lift snack. I mean, it's healthy. It's pretty boring, but I mean, I'm a big peanut butter fan. I think it's a solid sandwich. That's what I'd go with.
So just describe the philosophy in going with one slice crunchy, one slice smooth. That's interesting. I don't know that I've heard that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, when you go all one or the other, I mean, it's kind of boring. It's a little bit of a texture change, I guess. I mean, it makes it feel like there's more to the sandwich, so that it's more than just peanut butter. But I mean, if you just give one side crunchy or one side smooth, it's kind of all the same thing, and it's not enough peanut butter. So I think you need both sides, or a little bit of variety, to make it more of a sandwich rather than just a PB toast, I guess.
You heard it here first, folks. Clark Elliott is changing the peanut butter game here. That's a unique sandwich. Like, so is it just that you're not really a jelly guy? Do you sometimes also eat PB&J? Because, that's a pretty common answer we get, but I don't know that we've ever got just a straight up peanut butter sandwich.
Yeah, for me, jelly's too sweet. I mean, I don't really have a sweet tooth, so I like that more of a savory bitterness of peanut butter. It sticks with me a little bit better. Jelly's a little too sugary for me, so I like to keep it simple.
I hear you. No concerns with the peanut butter sticking to the roof of your mouth. I mean, you have to have like water on hand. I'm sure it gets a little dry, maybe.
Oh yeah. You have to have water on you.
That's right.
If you're an athlete, you don't have a water bottle with you. You don't
have to. A great point.
One more sandwich related question before we get out of here, and that's, Zingerman's in Ann Arbor is supposed to be like the place to go, the place Michigan people talk about after they graduate? Is it what it's cracked up to be?
Zingerman's is really good. It's a little bit on the pricey side, so it's kind of tough for us athletes right now. But, I mean, when you're going to treat yourself, I mean, Zingerman's is the place. I mean, you have Mazin Blue Deli, which is also sneaky favorite of mine. It's creeping up there on a lot of guys' lists, but Zingerman's is the classic. It's the go-to.
Okay. So next time anyone's in Ann Arbor, those are maybe check out the sneaky one. You know, it is mm-hmm. blue, sounds like.
Absolutely.
All right, Clark. Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. We're definitely looking forward to seeing what Michigan has on the field in 2022, and definitely seeing what you're able to do as the Wolverines look to return to the NCAA tournament next spring. So thank you for taking the time for us today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you again to Clark Elliott for joining us here on the Baseball America College Podcast. Joe, I was very interested in getting Clark on this program. He was one of the breakout stars of the summer. I think what he did at Michigan in the spring was, you know, really solid. He hit like 270, five home runs, like just a really good sound season, especially when you look at where he was in 2020. Now, I mean, it was an abbreviated schedule and he started every game as a true freshman for the Wolverines, but definitely had made a step in 2021. And then he went out and he did what he did this summer in the Cape, and he did it for a team in Hyannis that, you know, it wasn't like he was particularly protected in the lineup. They were the last place team in the standings, and not the most potent offense on the Cape, but he, you know, he was like the shining star there and was, you know, really, really made a big step in terms of putting himself on the draft map this summer. So I'm really interested in what he's doing. And I'm also really interested in what Michigan is doing as the Wolverines look to continue, you know, to push at the top of the Big Ten.
Yeah, totally agree on both accounts. You know, he was a guy that, you know, I knew the name, you know, just to look back a little bit on 2021, it was, the Big Ten was, as we talked about a couple of times, it was a little bit hard to follow just because it started late and it was all conference games. And so you really had to get into conference mode, and then it became so jumbled at a certain point. There were just yada, 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 a lot of reasons why it was tough to follow. So that, you know, the Michigan team was a weird one where they, you know, we all along kind of assumed they were going to be in the postseason, and then they cut it close in the end and they ended up doing it. So I think that kind of extended to some of their players. And so you're right that Clark Elliott had a nice season, and there were some guys in that lineup that had, you know, even better ones that I just kind of, you know, had kind of failed to acknowledge because it was hard to follow and hard to really lock into the Big Ten as much. And hopefully that changes a little bit in 2022, but certainly a good omen doing what he did on the Cape. I know, you know, the guys who, I mean, you could tell me better than I would know. And certainly the guys who covered the draft, like Carlos, or just longtime observers, Carlos Clazo, I should, for the listeners, a Baseball America draft writer, you know, would tell us that, you know, Cape performance, especially with something like leading the league in batting average, pretty good indicator of what a guy can do, certainly at the next level. But I think it would also tend to bode well for what that person does in the following season. And you heard it from him a little bit that, hey, we didn't have midweek games. We didn't, you know, we had a weird schedule where we had to be locked in from day one. So I think certainly with a more normal schedule, I think that also helps. And, you know, don't look now, you mentioned it being interested in Michigan. I think it's a pretty good lineup again, just kind of scrolling through what they have back, where you talk about Clark Elliott, but you also talk about guys like Ted Burton and Tito Flores, and Jimmy Obertop. And, you know, they've got some guys who are gone, you know, the grad transfers that he mentioned in the interview, those guys obviously not there. They did a good job kind of plugging some holes last year in a pinch. So there are some pieces to replace, but I think it's a pretty good lineup for a Michigan team that I think is going to be right there again in the Big Ten.
I like the Wolverines as you know, you look to 2022. I think we have Nebraska right now as the favorite. That was where we were at coming out of the season. I'd be kind of interested in revisiting that and seeing where we're at this you know, coming out of the fall. I know you just spoke with Will Bolt for our five questions series, so you obviously could speak to that pretty well. But I like the three teams that made the postseason from the Big Ten last year, Nebraska, Michigan, and Maryland. I think those three are going to be good again. Like they return enough. They have the hallmarks of being able to compete at a high level. And, Indiana, you got to figure they're going to be solid again. And Ohio State and Iowa, these are teams that find a way to consistently be in the discussion. But in terms of who is at the very peak of the conference, like I would just kind of look to those three teams and say that they should be able to run it back in a lot of ways. And you look at Michigan and yeah, I like what they're doing offensively. You mentioned, Obertop. I thought he was going to have a bigger year this year than he wound up having, but like the offensive potential is really significant. You now see, or everyone can now see what Elliott can do. And Michigan's a team that always defends really well. They do have to replace some key spots in terms of defense, but under Eric Bakich, they're always going to be a good defensive team. That's just one of the standards. And so I think they have a really intriguing group. Now, you mentioned what does being the batting champion mean on the Cape? And that's an interesting question. Historically, meaning like in the 21st century, it hasn't been like a lock that it means what you would want it to mean. Andrew Kalika like owns the Cape record. He hit 425 in 2015. And I don't know how many folks listening to this podcast remember Andrew Kalika playing for UCSB. So you do have some things like that, but more recently, Zach DeLoach, 2019, he sure seemed like he was having a decent start to 2020. When the season got canceled, Matthew Barefoot from Campbell in 2018, Tanner Dodson, 2017, Cole Freeman, 2016. Those are all pretty household names. And Kevin Newman won it back-to-back years. Now, from a draft perspective, you might look at these guys and view them slightly differently. But from a college perspective, these are really strong players. So at least for Michigan's sake, seeing what Elliott did this summer definitely seems like it would presage big things to come this spring.
Yeah, and on the mound with Michigan, I kind of went into it when I took a look at what they have coming back, having not really drilled super deep into it yet. But when you lose Steven Hadjer, who really had a nice year, maybe it wasn't, at least in terms of like the ERA.
Maybe it wasn't the like top 10 draft pick year. I was thinking he could do, but he had a really good year. If you remove outsized expectations based on like what he did in 2020, that he had a really good year.
Yeah. When I went back and looked at the stats page, I actually was kind of like surprised by, 110 strikeouts, 214 reported batting average. Like, okay, it was a better year than I had perceived. So that's definitely true there. And you lose some other pieces there, but when you consider that he's gone, and then a guy like Ben Dragani transferred out, and that's a guy who, as of a few years ago, we kind of thought, hey, this is maybe a future front of the rotation guy for Michigan, and injuries really derailed him. Now he is at Pitt, I believe, trying to make a go of it. But when you consider those two guys, if you looked at it a few years back, and those two guys are out of the program, and you kind of figure maybe they'd be in a rebuilding situation on the mound, but when you figure they have Karen Weston back, and Willie Weiss back, of course, regardless of whatever role Willie Weiss ends up holding. Jacob Jenner had a really nice year in some respects. So they've got some pieces there on the mound. I think it's a pretty well-rounded group. And I don't know. I mean, it's a little bit of an apples to oranges thing. And we've talked so much Michigan's over the last several years. It's kind of hard maybe to do a fair comparison. But Nebraska is in a position where they are replacing quite a bit all around. It's kind of the opposite of last year, though, where we had Will Bolt on the podcast, and he said, "Yeah, the pitchers kind of dominated our fall," and I guess that was kind of good news in one respect. But he was, when I talked to him a couple weeks ago, he admitted that I was a little bit worried at that time. It ended up working out okay. It's actually the opposite this year, where the offense was really ahead of the pitching, and I think that bodes well considering what they're missing from the offense, where it's three or four of their top bats. But I think too, they're built similarly to Michigan in terms of being pretty well-rounded. When you talk about, you've got Shea Shaneman back at the front of the rotation, who had a pretty good year last year as their Sunday guy. They're going to be looking for more out of him. Dawson McCarville, a Grand Canyon transfer, who I think could be maybe Chance Roach 2.0 at Nebraska. Roach last year came in from New Mexico State and was pretty solid for them. So I think maybe that's the idea there. The question is, what do you do with what Spencer Schwellenbach gave you? I just don't think there's any replacing that piece. So I think that's a little bit of a wild card there, where he was just such a dynamic piece of the puzzle there, both on the mound. He was untouchable on the mound. He was the steadiest guy in the lineup, or arguably the steadiest guy in the lineup. And there's just nobody like that, at least that jumps out. But I do think it's a really solid outfit. It'll be interesting when we kind of reevaluate this as the season approaches, what we think of these two teams. Because for me, I think, without really looking at the rest of the Big Ten name by name, those two teams really strike me as this is who we're talking about when we talk about the favorites next year.
I think that's probably fair. The losing your All-American, and your All-American in this case is a two-way player who's your shortstop at Nebraska, that's tough. And, you know, maybe that's even difficult for us to fully wrap our minds around just what Schwellenbach meant to the team, because he was their shortstop. He was their like three-hole hitter, and he also closed. So like, those are significant pieces. Just any one of them by themselves, you lose that player, we would have to be like, well, okay, well, how are they replacing that? And in this case, it's one guy doing those three massive roles. So that is definitely one thing to keep in mind. And you know, they have Max Anderson back. He was really exciting as a freshman, but there's going to just be more placed on his shoulders now. And you know, now the teams have had a year to see him, what kind of adjustments can he make, can they make, and all the rest of that. But if I do like hearing that their offense is considered to be ahead of their pitching, I think that probably bodes decently well for this, in the extent that, you know, you can take anything from fall progress like that, just knowing what they lost offensively. But I think that you're right, Joe, that it's Michigan and it's Nebraska right now. And I like Maryland. They have some premium arms, particularly, and they've consistently hit under the Rob Vaughn / John Scheff regime. So I feel pretty decent about them. Anyone else, you know, competing at for the very top, though, it would require some breakout performances probably that we haven't seen coming yet. But yeah, I'm looking forward to diving more into the Big Ten as we get closer, because there are some intriguing teams to be found, as always, in the conference, but especially this year, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, something that I'm sure we'll get into with, you know, both you and I kind of being kind of gravitating towards the Big Ten as we do during the season. The way in which, as this conference has improved, it does seem like, to some degree, and Nebraska's kind of been a little more up and down, they've been a little more fluid generally, but it does seem like we've got a little bit of hardening of the pecking order here, not quite as much, and that could change, of course, but it does seem like, as things have kind of improved, there's a little less fluidity from year to year, where the Big Ten used to be, as we've talked about before, kind of a deal where teams would go through up cycles and down cycles, and you still see that with certain programs, but less so at the top of the league. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic to watch play out. But I think part of that is that I haven't looked at Indiana's roster, really, to be honest with you, but I assume they're going to be good next year. You know, I think Maryland is approaching that point where we can kind of just write that in. For that matter, you can do the same with Iowa. Now, Iowa doesn't have the high highs that some of these other programs have, but you can kind of set your watch to Iowa finishing top half, challenging to finish top four or five. You know, I look at their roster quickly, and I don't know how this works, but it's like still the same names that feel like they've been on the roster for a decade now. Like, I don't, like, they keep finding eligibility for players. And I don't mean that seriously, but it's like, I look at the roster and how is Isaiah Fullard still around, you know, or Cam Bauman, guys like that, you know, it's the same guys. And so they're still working to kind of break through. That obviously is a good news for the Hawkeyes, as they just have a ton of experience. But I think we're kind of talking, you know, maybe there's a surprise in the mix there a little bit, but just on quick evaluation, it does feel like we're really kind of talking about the same six or seven programs that we've been talking about. And I'd love to be surprised, but it does feel like that is firming up a little bit.
It does seem like the top half of the conference has hardened a little bit. You know, you got Nebraska, Michigan, Maryland, Indiana, Ohio State, and then like Iowa and Illinois are kind of both right there on the edge. And Illinois had some really high highs and Iowa's had some pretty high highs, but they haven't necessarily sustained it like the rest of the teams I just mentioned. And then a couple of years ago, I would have said Minnesota, but you know, it's been a rough couple of years and we'll see where the Gophers go from here. But right now, I mean, that kind of seems to be the group. And then Rutgers is the team that's seems most likely to make a mess of this. They certainly came pretty close last year to breaking through. But it does feel like after a tumultuous period in the conference's history, it probably lasted about 10 years, where you saw Indiana break through. And then now it's like, okay, well, Indiana's just good. And you saw Purdue break the 100-year streak of not winning the Big Ten. And, Michigan State popped up with a couple really good teams. It does seem like things have maybe settled a little bit more, coalesced around this current arrangement. Now, having said all of that, I'm sure this year, like Nebraska will finish second to last and Penn State will win the league or something like that. But just when we think we have this conference figured out, something drastic will change, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way these things work. I mean, my quick thesis that I would want to test and bat around that we can do later is just kind of that the programs that are still trying to kind of cycle up and cycle down, like I think Illinois is still probably in that category. Iowa to a certain degree, although it feels like, you know, with the veterans they've had, they've been like cycling up and trying to hit for the last, you know, three full seasons. But those programs that try to cycle up and cycle down, because you have programs like Indiana, like Michigan, Maryland is approaching that point, that are just competing year after year at the top of the conference, it makes the margins really thin. To where if you're a team that's trying to cycle up to really push in a certain year, if you underachieve in the slightest bit, you're not making regionals and now you're cycling down. And if you're going to wait a few more years to cycle back up, now you're looking at, you know, not really necessarily being competitive for the postseason for 5 or 6 years as opposed to 3 years. That's a big oversimplification of it. But I do wonder if there's something like that at play where it's just harder to count on, hey, if we have to rebuild this thing and build back up, as has so often happened in the Big Ten, it's just a lot harder to do that year after year, because boy, you better hit when it's time to cycle up, because if you don't, you're going to get buried, because the league is just that competitive at the top now.
I mean, it is an interesting thesis. And like, I also think that you can see it like with even within some of these echelons, like, okay, well, this is a really good year for Indiana is different than like, well, this is like a year where Indiana is competing. And yeah, I mean, it's just getting harder and harder to the investment that you have seen from Indiana, from Nebraska, from Michigan, from programs like that. If you're not replicating it, it's only going to get harder. And so yeah, the Big Ten, endlessly fascinating as always. And I think that the conference standings again are probably going to be pretty tight this spring. Before we get out of here, Joe, we probably want to touch on the latest in the realignment news. And again, I've kind of forgotten what is new this week and what's old from last week. But I guess the new thing is that Conference USA is maybe sort of finding a path forward, maybe. There were reports yesterday that Conference USA will invite Liberty, New Mexico State. Who else are they inviting? Sam Houston State and Jacksonville State.
Yep,
yeah,
there it is.
They're going to invite those four teams. That would give them like kind of a core. Like the reports also indicate that's not the end of the moves.
for Conference USA. None of those invitations have been accepted, if they've even been offered. But I will say that if that all came to pass and those schools all joined, while Conference USA would definitely be diminished as a baseball league from what you are seeing right now, like remember last year how good it was with four teams in regionals, that would be decent. They would have stumbled into something pretty okay for baseball. I mean, Sam Houston State made super regionals not that long ago. You've seen Liberty, you've seen Louisiana Tech show some really high-end upside. FIU certainly has the ability to do it. So does Jacksonville State. So I don't know what that would mean. Like, are they better than the Missouri Valley or not? Like, I don't know. But it would be something, at least, if that did come to pass.
Yeah, I mean, happy accident. You know, so all this stuff, like we've talked about a million times, you know, baseball is not really at front of mind. And yet, Conference USA may well back their way into having a half decent baseball league. And man, I just, you know,
I don't know what the travel from Lynchburg, Virginia to Las Cruces. To Las Cruces is, but although I've learned that Las Cruces is not that far from El Paso. So I guess you like fly into El Paso and then drive the next like 45 minutes or whatever it is to Las Cruces. But still.
Yeah, you're probably flying into El Paso, but there's at least one stop in between those two points. That's for sure. No matter where you're leaving out of, you know, Virginia or wherever it is, like, yeah, there's definitely a stop between those two places, probably in something like Dallas. But the travel's not going to be great there in a lot of ways, but it does appear there's a path forward for survival for CUSA, at least for a little while. And that's good news, if for no other reason than like, just from the compassion standpoint of, hey, there's people that work in this conference office, and if this conference dies, what do they do? You know, there are a lot of reasons why it's good that these conferences don't just go away, but man, beyond just needing to exist, it is becoming increasingly difficult to define a reason for being for Conference USA. And that's probably been largely true for a long time now, but it had just been long enough that we'd gotten kind of used to it. And now it really has just kind of been front and center that there's really not a unifying thing for teams in this league. It's really just about survival at this point. So it looks like they maybe have staved off whatever death, I don't want to be dramatic, but whatever death kind of looks like here, it looks like they fought that off. We'll have to see how it continues, because it just doesn't feel like it's anywhere close to done. And I think you and I are looking at a future where for the next several years, we have to spend some time in the preseason when we do conference previews, double checking to make sure we have the right teams in each conference, because that's going to be a challenge coming up in a handful of leagues, in particular the next couple of years.
Yeah. Also in related news, the MAC is reportedly close to inviting Middle Tennessee State and Western Kentucky. They would move from Conference USA. From a baseball standpoint, I mean, obviously we spent a lot of time talking about the MAC on this podcast last year. I don't know that if you add Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee State to the MAC a year ago, like, does that actually like push Ball State's RPI to get it in? Probably not. But again, like, those are programs that in theory could be okay at baseball, have like shown pretty good baseball stuff at times. So again, for the top teams in the MAC, for Kent State, for Ball State, for Central Michigan, getting two more competitive teams into the conference does seem like a positive.
Yeah, I mean, they're better, certainly better than the low-end MAC programs that already exist. So from a baseball standpoint, you could see some value there. I also
see some value from a basketball standpoint. Western Kentucky is pretty solid at basketball, and maybe that brings a little more money into the conference, and maybe that leads to a little more investment in certain areas. So like, it seems like a relatively positive thing for the MAC, although it's not a massive needle mover in any direction, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. It's a good point. I mean, in leagues that don't have big money football, like those NCAA tournament shares that you get that increase for each conference or NCAA tournament game you win, those are a big deal, especially, like I said, in those conferences that don't have a ton of football money coming in. I mean, the one place where it doesn't seem to make a ton of sense is from football, because I think one of the things the MAC really has going for it is it's a very tight geographic conference with a bunch of schools that have been playing each other forever. So the homogeneity, you know, maybe there's some negative there in terms of it's a lot of the same types of players they're all recruiting from. It's the same types of teams. There's that the parity is ridiculous in that conference. But I do also think it's a conference that knows who it is for the most part and has seemed pretty content to be who it is. And adding these two teams, I don't think really tilts that too much, but it does widen their footprint a decent amount compared to what it is now, although not nearly as much as Conference USA, for example. But and so yeah, I was a little bit surprised for that one, just from that standpoint.
I think that's kind of the national read on it. But if you look at the history of the MAC, they've always kind of had like stuff happening on the edges. The core is the core. The core is the seven schools in Ohio and the three schools in Michigan. And like that is the core of the league. And I guess you can throw Ball State into it. Like Northern Illinois flirted with the WAC at one point and actually like left for a few years. They came back. Like Buffalo probably was viewed kind of similarly before they joined as they reclassified from Division II. Marshall has been in the league. Temple has been in the league. UMass has, I think, been associated with the MAC at some time in football. And none of this really changed the conference when those schools drifted away or were kicked out or in NIU's case came back into the fold. So like the core is the core and things might happen on the periphery, but as long as everyone understands that the core is the core, I think the MAC can afford to make these kinds of moves. And maybe Western Kentucky and MTSU are only in the league for 10 years. I don't know, but, or maybe they become like members for the next 50. But I think as long as the Ohio and the Michigan stays the core, that the MAC is just fine.
Pardon me if you rattled this off as part of your fun facts about who's been in the MAC before, but from 2002 to 2005, UCF was a football member of the MAC.
You know, I did not because that predates my MAC knowledge, but that is, I mean, like they can do these things. Like things just happen in the MAC and, you know, Temple came in, Temple went out, like it's all good, you know? and some people, you know, Marshall had some really solid year, like the best years in the 21st century or end of 20th century, Marshall football. Like the Randy Moss years, the Byron Leftwich years, the years that people really think about when they think about Marshall. I mean, they happened in the MAC. So Marshall left, but the MAC still is like, that's still part of like the history and tradition of the conference. All right, that's enough MAC talk for the week. I probably for the month, I probably hit my quota there. But as realignment continues to unfold, we'll continue to talk about it. At some point, I will like write through what all of this means for college baseball. I keep waiting for like it to hit a lull, and it never does. But I think here, once these Conference USA moves become a little more official, I might finally be able to say like, all right, so like where does all of this stand now in terms of mid-majors and everything? Like, if you want to read what it means for the Big 12 and the SEC, like that's at baseballamerica.com. But we'll get into, at some point I will write up like what I think this actually means for the Sun Belt and the American and Conference USA and whoever else gets affected by this. So look for that in the coming weeks. But for now, that's going to do it for us here on the Baseball America College Podcast. Make sure you are subscribed to the podcast on your favorite podcast app, be that Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find podcasts, you can find us and hit the follow, subscribe, whatever button, rate and review if possible as well. We love to hear your thoughts. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy, BA. And there is plenty to read over at baseballamerica.com. Thank you to Clark Elliott for joining us today. Thank you to Rapsodo for presenting this and every episode of the Baseball America College Podcast. For Joe, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.